spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Life. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Life, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, Investment in People, was written by Joseph Mindell and was based in part on the book of that name by Edwin R. Embry and Julia Waxman.
Julius Rosenwald was a rich man. This in itself is not unusual, for in his times there were richer men. If his talent lay solely in accumulating a fortune, there would be little to say. But his attitude toward his fortune was unusual, and therefore there is a story to tell. This is the story of Mr. Rosenwald's money. One day, a reporter came to interview him.
Mr. Rosenwald, our readers are interested in knowing your views on many things.
Yes, I know. Your readers want to know my opinion on matters I know nothing about.
Well, not exactly, sir.
I don't see a single reason why they should be interested in my opinions on anything except, well, maybe business and finance.
Mr. Rosenwald, you're a prominent man.
You mean a rich man.
You can say it either way, sir.
I don't understand the connection in the public mind between brains and money.
It takes brains to make a fortune, as you did.
Young man, there are men walking the street outside, penniless, who have more brains than I'll ever have.
What's that, sir?
Let me tell you something else. Some of the richest men in the country are among the least intelligent I have ever known.
May I quote you, Mr. Rosenwald?
You see, it isn't hard to make a lot of money, honestly and legally.
No?
The difficult thing is to dispose of it wisely.
I haven't had experience with these things myself, Mr. Rosenwald, but it seems to me the easiest thing in the world is spend a couple of million dollars.
Young man, any fool can spend money. The problem is to spend it wisely.
Mr. Rosenwald, you're putting several million dollars into your new corporation.
Yes, Tobias.
Well, I consider it my duty as your lawyer to inform you.
You don't approve. I know.
Well, it's your money, Mr. Rosenwald.
Exactly.
But I don't see why you have to organize a corporation to spend it.
Well, maybe I want to help in spending it usefully. Now I've told you what I want. Put it in lawyer's language.
As you wish.
Now, wait a minute. All except the first sentence.
How would you like it worded?
I've thought about it for a long time, and this is how I want it. The object for which this corporation is organized shall be the well-being of mankind.
It is a simple idea and not a new one. The common welfare is the concern of every man. In 1917, the Rosenwald Fund was incorporated to further the well-being of mankind. But perhaps it really began a few years earlier, when Rosenwald walked along a southern dirt road with a former slave, then head of the Tuskegee Institute, Booker T. Washington.
Well, here it is, Mr. Rosenwald.
Dr. Washington, someone ought to do a job of repair on that woodshed off the road.
That is not a woodshed, sir. It's a schoolhouse.
No.
Yes?
You must be wrong, Dr. Washington. Look at the windows without glass. And the roof. What happens when it rains?
When it rains, an older pupil holds an umbrella over the teacher if someone has an umbrella. And when it's cold, they build a fire outside and everyone, pupils and teacher, runs out occasionally to warm up.
Is this typical of rural education?
It's called education, yes.
Dr. Washington, there are no pupils in the schoolhouse.
School is out for the year.
In March?
Mr. Rosenwald, this school year lasts 4 months.
For all children?
For white children, it's 8 months.
It doesn't make sense.
The Negro boy is smart, but white folks expect too much of him if they think he can learn as much in 4 months as their boys can in 8.
How much would it cost to build a decent schoolhouse with heat, with toilets, with a place to hang clothing and store books?
Well, we have made plans at Tuskegee, Mr. Rosenwald, and I can tell you exactly. $900.
Mr. Washington, I'll pay for as many schools as you can build in the South.
No. No, it's too much.
Believe me, I can afford it.
Well, if you'll pay one-third the cost of every schoolhouse.
But why not the whole cost?
Because it isn't enough for you to want to build schools, Mr. Rosenwald, but the people who live here, Negro and white, must also want it.
I've been thoughtless. Please excuse me.
Oh, there's nothing to excuse, Mr. Rosenwald. You see, it would be wrong if your money became our crutch.
Now, friends. Friends, you know why this meeting is called tonight.
Of course we know. Rich white man from the north wants to give us something for nothing.
That's right. Mr. Judas Rosenwald wants to give us $300 to build a new schoolhouse.
Does he want a mortgage?
Now, laughing is no answer. Oh, I know what you mean. What for, you're saying? What for he want to give us money? Well, I don't know. But let me ask you, Joe. What for you helped Frank over there with his carton? And Mary, what for you took care of Ella's children when she was sick? Well, I don't know what for. But I ain't going to say it's bad unless I know it's bad.
I want to say something.
Speak your mind.
I don't know we need a school. Makes the kids dissatisfied. Takes them out of the fields where we need them. I went to school less than 3 months in my whole life. I'm doing all right.
Well, sometimes a man can't help it if he gets no learning. But I can't see he got any reason to be proud of it.
I don't know what's all this talking. Of course we want a school. And if this here Mr. Rosenwald wants to help us get it, why, we're thankful. But $300 don't build no schoolhouse.
No, it don't. But we got to raise $200 besides. I figure that's $1 for every family.
A dollar's a lot of cash money.
Maybe so. But everybody spent a dollar sometime on foolishness. Now, this is $1 we're going to get our money's worth.
How long we got to raise it?
Well, if everybody's agreeable, we meet in 4 weeks. With the money.
Here's my dollar. Wasn't easy to get it together.
Well, don't we all know it? I'll take your name off the list. There you are. Who's next?
Me. I'm next. No need to count it. There's only 87 cents. But I brought some turnips my woman grew in the patch, and maybe we could...
We're not counting so exact that 87 cents ain't a dollar.
Well, what happens to the money now?
Well, Mr. Rosenwald's man is going to bring it to the county superintendent of schools.
About this money, Mr.
My name is Prentice, Mr. Superintendent. I work for the Rosenwald Fund.
I'm not saying this is my opinion, Mr. Prentice, but some people down here might not like the idea of building schools for Negroes.
Some people don't like almost any idea. But what do you think?
What I think isn't always what I can do. I think that ignorance and poverty go together. Neither one does anybody any good.
Mr. Superintendent, here are three checks. $300 from the Rosenwald Fund. $236 collected by colored people.
What do their white neighbors think?
This is $185 contributed by the white folks in town. They want a new school.
Now, Miss Prentice, I don't mind saying I'm impressed. What is the county supposed to do?
Supply the rest of the money for building, and then maintain the school.
Yeah, sounds like a reasonable proposition.
There's one other condition.
Yes?
The school must be operated for 8 months of the year.
Tell me, how many schools does Mr. Rosenwald want to build?
As many as you do.
And tell him to get his checkbook ready. We're going to build a lot of schools.
There's a saying... Charity is the saving salt of wealth. You may not like the sound of the word charity. It is nevertheless a good word if you say it the way Julius Rosenwald meant it. To him, it did not mean that you had a kind heart or only that you wanted to help. You gave because that was part of your responsibility as a human being. And if you had a lot of money, then the responsibility was greater. In 15 years, almost 5,000 rural schools were built. It wasn't always easy. Some superintendents were bigoted and short-sighted. Some counties preferred ignorance to the help of a northerner. But in 15 years, warm, dry, well-equipped buildings were provided for more than 600,000 children. A schoolhouse is only a building. One day in autumn, Prentice brought Julius Rosenwald to see what went on in a Louisiana school he helped build.
Prentice, I don't want to interrupt the lesson.
We won't, Mr. Rosenwald. We stand in the doorway.
Now, children, close your books and we'll see if you've learned the lesson. Laura, you tell us, when do the robins come?
The robins come in the fall.
Laura, you didn't read it very carefully. Now, open your book, please, and read it aloud. Louder, please, Laura.
The robin is a migratory bird. We do not see him all year round. We are very glad when he returns to us in the spring.
Well, can you tell us now, Laura, when the robins come?
The robins come in the fall.
Laura, you've read the lesson twice. When do the robins come?
The robins come in the spring.
That's better. Now, children, when you read a lesson, you know...
Prentice, what's the matter with that teacher? Didn't she see the robins as she came to school this morning?
The textbook was written in Boston, Mr. Rosenwald. In Boston, the robins come in spring.
You had a reason for bringing me here, didn't you?
Did I?
I'm thankful to you. Look at it, Prentice. It's a handsome school building. Prentice, maybe we built enough schoolhouses. Maybe it's time to pay some attention to what goes on inside them.
Well, I'm glad to see you again, Mr. Prentice. What are you offering this time?
Books, Mr. Superintendent, for a library in each school.
You don't just by chance, of course, happen to have a sample set with you.
I have a list. 45 carefully selected titles.
Yeah, 45 books. That comes to at least $75. You know how many schools we have in this county, Prentice? We can't afford that much money.
Can you afford $24 for each library?
Well, maybe we can. Why doesn't the Rosenwald Fund give us the books?
That isn't the point.
No?
When the fund's money becomes a crutch, we figure it's time to close up shop.
All right. We'll buy the books. Tell me, do you happen to have a supply of capable, well-trained teachers?
Well, not yet, but we're working on it.
Now, let me ask you young people a question. Why have you come to Tuskegee Institute? Oh, come, come. Is it such a foolish question?
Well, I don't know about the others, Professor.
Yes?
But I came here to learn how to be a teacher.
Oh, yes. I see. Well, then let me ask you another question. Why do you want to be teachers? Well, I guess that's so foolish it can't be answered.
Well, I want to teach children how to read and write and do their sums.
Young man, that's not enough.
Well, Professor, I worked for 2 years to earn money to come here. If there's more, I want to know it. What else is there?
A great deal more. You must teach the children how to play and be children. Then maybe you'll have to teach their mothers how to take care of them when they're sick, and their fathers how to take care of the land.
I don't want to be a doctor or an agriculturist. I just want to be a teacher.
Yes, but in the country districts where you're going, a teacher must be a little of everything. Doctor, agriculturist, yes, even a lawyer, and sometimes a minister.
Professor, you don't make it sound easy.
I never promised you anything easy. And it isn't too late if someone wants to change his mind. No one? All right. Then let's begin.
In a way, the work of the Rosenwald Fund was always beginning. For its money was not to be a substitute for the efforts of the people themselves. It was used in the spirit of Maimonides' admonition. to help people meet their own needs and make themselves independent. And if the people were not yet ready, then the money was to be a pin in the seat of lethargy, of indifference, of ignorance.
Of the money needed to build 5,000 schoolhouses, one-third was contributed by the Rosenwald Fund, a little more than a third by Negro and white citizens, and the rest by the counties.
When the people and the government had been stimulated, the fund withdrew and began again in a new field. This was the first great idea, that money must serve as a stimulant. The second idea was equally important. One day in 1928, Julius Rosenwald met with the trustees of the fund.
Gentlemen, I would like to add $2 million to the capital of the fund.
That's very generous, Mr. Rosenwald.
But hardly necessary, Mr. Rosenwald.
What do you mean, Tobias?
Well, despite the administrative expenses and the many contributions the fund has made, you'll be pleased to learn that the original capital has earned a considerable sum through investments.
You think I should be pleased?
Well, of course, Mr. Rosenwald.
Why?
For obvious reasons.
Tobias, if I want to profit on my money, I know better ways of investing it. The purpose of the fund is not to make a profit, but to spend money useful.
Well, I know that, Mr. Rosenwald.
And what are you thinking of?
Of the future. The problems the fund is working on will continue for a long time.
The money in the fund came from this generation. Now is when it should be spent.
But, Mr. Rosenwald, how can you be sure of the future?
I am sure that the generations that will follow us will be every bit as humane and enlightened as we are. We can leave the needs of the future to be met by the generations of the future.
You realize, Mr. Rosenwald, that this goes completely against the current ideas on philanthropic administration?
Does it? Tobias, do you remember the biblical story of the manna that fell in the desert?
Of course.
Then you know that the manna that fell each day rotted at the end of the day. Gentlemen, there is a condition attached to my offer.
What is the condition, Mr. Rosenwald?
All the money in the fund must be spent within 25 years after my death.
This is the today of our generation. Today has its own needs which should be served. Other philanthropists changed the terms of their endowments so that the capital was spent in the present instead of accumulating for the future. By the logic of necessity, the Rosenwald Fund was driven step by step into further fields. It began with schoolhouses for neglected people. But a schoolhouse is an empty virtue if no learning takes place in it. And so books had to be provided and good teachers trained. Then the fund turned from people to single persons. And this was the next step.
The Committee on Fellowships is ready to see you now, Miss Anderson.
Thank you.
Now, we assume that you want to go to Europe to continue your studies.
Well, that's part of the reason.
Part?
Well, I also want experience in actual concert performance.
But surely here in America...
Well, there aren't many professional engagements for Negro artists.
I'm sorry. I didn't have to make you say that.
It's a fact whether I say it or not.
Miss Anderson, you know that applicants in music are asked to perform.
I'm ready.
We have an accompanist for you.
Oh, thank you.
Simple announcement came to Marian Anderson in 1930.
We have the honor to inform you that you have been awarded a fellowship from the Julius Rosenwald Fund.
In 20 years, it came to hundreds of others, Negro and white, to Ralph J. Bunch, to Catherine Dunham, James Weldon Johnson, Langston Hughes, Lillian Smith, Claude McKay. And its coming was an opportunity to fulfill a promise. From building schoolhouses to supplying books and teachers, then to fellowships. These were indirect approaches to the improvement of the relations between Negro and white. And as a last logical step, the Rosenwald Fund turned directly to the problem of race relations, stimulating ideas, giving financial support, bringing people together.
From the Rosenwald Fund, Mr. Prentice. Aren't you in the wrong place?
No, not a mistake.
This is a factory. I'm a factory owner. What can I do for the fund?
People usually ask the question the other way around.
All right. What can the fund do for me?
I understand you have a labor shortage.
Mr. Prentice, one quarter of my machines are not operating because I can't get working.
There's a labor supply you haven't even touched.
Well, I've hired every of it. Oh. I see what you mean.
Well?
It can't be done, Mr. Prentice.
Why not?
This is the South. White workers would refuse to work next to Negroes.
You haven't tried it?
I'm sorry, Mr. Prentice. As an individual, I think it'd be a good thing, but I know my men.
I spoke to some of the men this morning.
And they refused.
Well, they didn't say one way or another. But they told me something interesting.
What was that?
They said that regardless of what they thought, you would never permit it.
Oh. Now, that's what they think. Mr. Prentice, those extra machines can start turning tomorrow. If...
If what?
I have a union contract. Will the union take in the new men?
Now, Mr. Prentice, you can tell them that our union local voted in favor.
Oh, that's fine, Johnson.
Just one thing, though. I'm not talking for myself now. I'm against Jim Crow.
What are you trying to say?
I'm the president of the local, but I've got only one vote. We voted to recommend a separate local for the new mayor.
Good, Johnson. That's what they want.
What's that?
They feel they can serve their interests best in a separate local.
Well, okay. Anyway, they can use our union hall for meetings.
All right, Johnson. Even if there are two locals, it's a beginning, and a good beginning.
The reason I asked you to come down, Mr. Prentice, is we want some advice.
Oh, is there trouble in the factory, Johnson?
Oh, no, it's nothing like that. I've been talking to Bailey, the president of the local, too. You see, it's inefficient.
What is?
Well, it's like this. Our local has a meeting, we get through, then local two meets and takes up pretty much the same business.
That's to be expected.
Sure. Then when I go up to the supervisor's office about a grievance, Bailey is there for the same reason.
So you and Bailey got to talk.
Yeah, it's a waste of time. It's inefficient. Mr. Prentice, what would you say to the idea of joining both locals into one?
An idea grows slowly and stirs people slowly into action. Julius Rosenwald spent $60 million for ideas, for Jewish institutions and culture, for aid to immigrants, for a museum of science and industry, for other civic purposes. In the years of its existence, the Rosenwald Fund spent $20 million. What was bought by the expenditure? A modest portion of equality of opportunity. A little light in place of ignorance. A few ideas to stir people. On June 30th, 1948, the fund closed its books and was ended. But where did it begin? Perhaps in something Julius Rosenwald said.
I am the inferior of any man whose rights I trample under my feet.
Or the beginning may be in a passage from Deuteronomy.
Love ye therefore the stranger, for ye were strangers in the land of Egypt.
To the people who were strangers in their own land, it was a rich endowment. For real endowments are not money, but ideas. And this is the measure by which to compute the worth of Mr. Rosenwald's money. Like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now I take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Peter Sampson, chairman of the 50th Anniversary Celebration Committee of the Jewish Federation of Chicago, speaking to you from Chicago. Mr. Sampson.
It is a privilege to speak to you from Chicago today, because it was here that Mr. Rosenwald received his early training in the practical phases of helping people who were in need. It was here in Chicago that Julius Rosenwald joined hands with the other leading men of the Jewish community in carrying on the age-old tradition of tzedakah. Here was the hub of their work. By their very interest in helping others, they themselves were helped beyond measure. The measure by which we may compute the worth of Mr. Rosenwald's benefactions lies wholly in the ideas which he expressed so forcefully and so beneficially for thousands upon thousands of people of every race and creed the world over. But Mr. Rosenwald himself knew that these ideas were the living expression of a tradition that has its roots deep, deep in the soil of Jewish history, going back to the very days when Abraham gave voice to the oneness of God and to the great prophets of Israel who first gave voice to the ideas of justice, mercy, and compassion as a creed by which all men might live. The well-being of mankind, which formed the preamble of so much of his work, was no idle phrase. From the first days when he became interested, because of his inherent desire to be of service to mankind, his whole life and activities were bound up with the charitable work of this Jewish community. For many years, he was the guiding spirit and president of the Jewish Federation of Chicago. He strove for the unity of the Jewish community as he strove for the union of that community with all mankind. There is no doubt that the work he did in this organization had an important bearing on his later interest in so many of the then untouched fields of human and welfare. We have come a long way since the Jewish Federation of Chicago was first founded 50 years ago. The institutions which Julius Rosenwald and the men of his times helped build for future generations have their counterparts in cities throughout America. These institutions are our rich endowment, no matter whether they be in Chicago or Boston or Los Angeles or in any city the length and breadth of our land. The bright example of Julius Rosenwald's work in so many fields of human endeavor is followed today by many thousands of men and women everywhere. Ours is the privilege and responsibility to carry forward this work, for our nation is yet young, and the Jewish communities of our nation even younger.
Thank you, Mr. Sampson. Free time to present The Eternal Light is made available by the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.